You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
And welcome into the latest edition of ESPN FC. Here in the studio, we have Shekhar Hislop, Stevie Nicol, and myself, Kay Murray. In just a short while, we'll be hearing from Frank Leboeuf and Jurgen Klinsmann as well. And we will be talking about the Euros because Euro 2024 qualifiers got underway on Thursday. Poland and Wales in Pathé both booking their spot in Tuesday's final. Only one of them will be going to the tournament this summer. And when it comes to the tournament, just a look at the odds and who the favourites are. It's England and France who are tied as favourites right now, followed by Germany, Spain and Portugal.
I think, you know, it's actually put pretty okay. I think England has a big shot at this European Championship. I think they're matured throughout the last couple of tournaments. They got closer and closer, and it's about time, I would say, that England definitely, you know, claims a trophy again. They're looking, you know, as a united unit. Southgate has them run over the last couple of years very smoothly, high quality. I mean, the team is not lacking any issues. So I would go with England. Obviously, the other ones are very strong teams as well. And I hope, and obviously I hope for my German team that they wake up, that they come back and they play this tournament at home. There will be a lot of excitement. There's no doubt about it. There are some issues at the moment. There were issues obviously in the recent past, but they have to leave that behind and they have to demonstrate again to their nation that they are united, that they are ready for a big, big challenge. The quality they have, you know, the quality comes from teams like Bayern Munich or Leverkusen that has a fantastic season right now, or Borussia Dortmund. The quality is there, but they have to prove a point now.
Yeah, talk to us a little bit more about Germany, though, improving that point. Do you think they have what it takes to do so? Because obviously we've seen them under Nagelsmann so far, not really the best of a sample size to take, especially with the fact it's friendlies, Jurgen, so far. Two losses, a draw and a win under Nagelsmann. How do you think they're shaping up?
For Germany, it's always been an issue, you know, with friendly games, because we just simply don't take them as serious as we should, probably. So I'm not too worried about losing a couple of friendlies. You know, the hope that I have, and I have this hope really for Julian Nagelsmann, because I think he's a very, very talented coach. He's obviously very young still, but he has already proven a couple of high-quality decisions that he made. And I hope for him that he gets a chance to put a team together that is united, a team that is hungry, extremely hungry for proving a point. Obviously, the last two World Cups of Germany were very heavily, heavily disappointing, especially what happened in Qatar was a disaster for us. And I hope, you know, that he gets that chance to put a team together that is a team that has a good chemistry, that has a good spirit, that is hungry, and that they prove to their fans that they can play football. I mean, there's no doubt about it that they're all very, very good individual players. If you look at the other teams as well, they have highly talented players. It doesn't matter if it's France, England, Spain, Portugal, and so forth. They are all very good. But at the end of the day, it's only a team that can make a difference. And I hope that Jürgen Nagelsmann, you know, finds a way to get all the players on the same wavelength and just go out there and start to fight. And if they do that, then I think Germany, with the crowd, you know, behind, their fans behind, they can maybe do something very, very special.
I saw you smile at something Jurgen said then, Stevie. What was it?
I was just thinking about, are Germans really going to be happy going into this competition if between now and then that Nagelsmann's losing games and not figuring out what sort of team to put on the field? You know, I lost to Turkey, I lost to Austria. And we understand inside football that you need to try things, you need to try certain players in certain positions. You need to try 3-5-2 or 4-4-2. You need to try all these things in order when the tournament comes around that you know what you have, however you want to play it, is ready for the tournament. The problem is, if Germany go and lose and lose and lose, are the Germans going to get behind them, or are they waiting to pounce on them? You know, if that's the case, that's not good. Now, if Germans are very cool and calm and calculated, which, by the way, I don't believe they are, then that's OK. Then all that matters is what happens in the tournament. But I just don't see the Germans being happy going into a tournament without winning games.
Jürgen's cool and calculated, isn't he?
Well, he doesn't count. He's been in California far too long.
I don't think that anybody going into the Euros, you know, is cool and calculated. I think every team is a bit nervous. Every coach is a bit nervous. You as a coach, you are just a human being as well. So you hope that their first game is going well. You hope that you get your people behind you. You hope that, you know, you score the first goal and you get the first 3 points when you get into that tournament. I remember 2006 when I had the honor to guide Germany in the World Cup there. We won the first game 4-2 against Costa Rica, and all the media did was talking about the two goals we conceded, not about the four that we actually scored. So, yes, I mean, you are a bit nervous, you are hesitant, and you hope that, you know, the pieces fall into place once you start the tournament. It depends also a lot on the leadership of certain players. And Julian Nagelsmann now had Manuel Neuer back in the camp. Unfortunately, he got injured, so he had to go back then and is not playing these two friendlies that they scheduled. He brings in Toni Kroos back. Obviously, Toni has done it all on all levels. You know, he's a fantastic player with an incredible amount of experience. But now Nagelsmann has the task to meld the group of players together, the group of players that has exciting talents, like Musiala is probably one of the most exciting players on the planet right now in his age. And he has to figure out a way to get the older ones on the same page, the younger ones on the same page. So what you need is, you need 3 points to start the tournament with. If you get the 3 points right in the beginning, I think the crowd goes behind you and will give you a hand.
I'm interested to know your thoughts on Kai Havertz right now, Jürgen, because obviously with Kai Havertz, he can be quite polarising when it comes to pundits on what they think. What do you think he brings to this German side, and what's his best position?
Well, obviously, he gave it a shot the last time, playing him left back. I think he realized, okay, that it's not his best position. Kai Havertz is a very talented player. He's good. He proves it. I mean, he's showing that week in, week out, and his best spot is up front somewhere. He comes from the left, from the right, or he plays in the middle. You know, he scores his goals, and he has a tremendous good season at Arsenal. So I'm sure that, you know, you tried something out that you probably wouldn't try out anymore a second time. But I remember, you know, we won the European Championship 96. That was the last time Germany won it. And we had a situation with injuries, and my striking partner, Freddy Bobic, had to play left back in the second game, I think. So he played it well, you know, but I think for Kai, leave him up front. let him be close to the opponent's goal and not to your own goal.
Let me get to you then, Frank, because we've got to talk about the fact that it is England, France and Germany that are among the favourites here. We just heard Jürgen say that England are better than France. Sorry about that, Frank. Who are you most worried about of the two of them?
Oh, you can talk, you know, 3 or 4 months before the tournament. You can talk and say whatever you want. You know, how many times England has been the favorite of a competition since 1966, you know? But I would say the same for France. And the last Euro, they lost in the quarterfinal against Switzerland after a very appalling game. So you can say whatever you want, you know, and I pray for all players, for none of them to be injured, because you know that if you lose one top players in England or in France, it's going to be a big change of thinking. So, but I think it's only fair that England and France are sharing the first spot. After, I'm a little bit surprised that even Germany, I'm okay with that, because they play at home and but they're going to be there because they're going to fight for their nation in their homeland. So they're not going to be disappointing. So I have no issues with that. But I'm surprised with Portugal, I have to say. To be only fifth, with the team that they have, the player that they have, how they perform during the qualification. I'm only surprised that they only, I think, 7-1 in the odds. That's quite unfair for me, because they are, for me, one of the contenders.
Favourite, Shaka?
Favourites for me, France. World Cup finalists in 2022. I just feel they certainly have the most complete team. And while you can make the argument that England have improved since 2022 with the continued emergence of Jude Bellingham, of Declan Rice, Kobbie Mainoo now in the squad, my concern is while that's great in theory, in practice, you're still not quite sure what you're getting, particularly with Gareth Southgate, who is more pragmatic than adventurous. He tends to rely on those players who have served him well, and that's worked for him. But I think it's only gotten him that far. So if it comes down to pound-for-pound talent, where I think France just has the edge, but you could debate that. In terms of management, I think Didier Deschamps is the better of the two. So for me, I make France favourites. I feel as though I'm at a point now where I have to give honourable mention to Germany and hope that they come good. Just because in 2018, I thought Germany are one of the favourites going into that World Cup. They're disappointed. So I'm like, listen, this doesn't happen twice in a row. They failed me in 2020-21. Then I was like, that don't ever happen three times in a row. They failed me in 2022. So I'm at the point now where I just have to stick with them until they somehow get it right.
You're just trying to get on Jürgen's good side.
I'm not trying to get on Jürgen's good side. I'm just trying to somehow ride this three-legged horse till it comes good for me.
I'm laughing at the bravado from Stevie. Scotland have got them in the opening game.
Pretty much guaranteeing
Scotland to win there, aren't
they? And Jürgen said they have to win. Germany have to win their opening game. And who else but the Scots?
So it's, at least we know what we're doing. I'm being serious. At least Scotland have got a plan. And they stick to it. You can't say that about Germany. And if Germany don't win... Jürgen's right. If they win the first game, all of a sudden, the whole country's behind them. That can take you on the crest of a wave. However, if you lose to Scotland... I think the roof might cave in. So, you better be careful. Germany ain't third favourites, put it that way.
Are you worried about that, Jürgen?
Yes. Yes, I'm worried about that.
Should be.
I tell you, anything can happen. Anything can happen in your first game. And Scotland, obviously, they will fight for their lives and they will go in there. And until you're not scoring that first goal, it will be tough and difficult. And they can always score a goal, a set piece or a counter break or whatever, you know. So you're just not safe. So somehow you got to get through it and somehow you got to beat them. But when Scotland will come with their amazing fans, you know, and they will make it loud. They will make it really, really loud in the Munich Allianz Arena with the opening game.
See, I told you, Scotland's got a plan. Even Jürgen knows it. Set pieces and counter-attack.
And make it loud in the stadium.
Big fans.
All right, be sure to be with us every single day here on ESPN FC for more talk like this when it comes to world football.
We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/FC. Just go to Indeed.com/FC right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on the podcast. Indeed.com/FC, terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They are the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at electricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's electricebikes.com. Just a reminder of the Champions League bracket next month. The quarterfinals get underway. We've got Jürgen and Frank with us. And Jürgen, I want to draw your attention to that tie between Arsenal and Bayern Munich. What was your initial reaction when you saw that Bayern had drawn Arsenal?
Well, reaction was right away, wow, this is a real game. We got a real game here. I think obviously Arsenal has a tremendous positive season, is up there for the title race with Man City and Liverpool. And Bayern Munich is a little bit hurt. Bayern Munich is angry because in the German Bundesliga, they're actually not doing that bad, but Bayer Leverkusen is just doing it perfectly. I mean, they have a run. This is just incredible. And they ran away. They're 10 points ahead. And even if Bayern season is not bad at all, they look like kind of in the second place, like the losers. But they are actually not the losers. They're playing an okay season, even in the Bundesliga. So it leaves it up to the Champions League. And Bayern is just a club. It's an environment. It's an atmosphere in Munich where when the big, big challenges come up, like especially in the Champions League, they're ready for it. They want that so badly. So this will be a great matchup, Arsenal against Bayern Munich.
Jürgen, talk to us a little bit about the pressure that Thomas Tuchel finds himself under here, because it's a weird situation, isn't it? We know that he's leaving at the end of the season. Obviously, we know what's going on, as you just mentioned, in the Bundesliga with Leverkusen leading the way right now. And then it comes to look at the Champions League, where this is a competition and a trophy that's still very much available to them. Does that just turn the pressure up on him?
Well, you arrive at Bayern Munich and the pressure is just there 24/7. It's just a natural thing. The people there, the fans, the club itself defines itself always only in trophies. They just live off trophies. It's their daily blood. It's what they expect. So it's expected that you win the German Championship and the German Cup. That's just normal for them. But then on top, it's expected that once every couple of years, you got to bring home the Champions League. And that's how they live every day. And if you have...
Oh. It looks as though we've lost Jürgen Klopp there, but you can obviously... It's trying to draw on his...
We lost Klopp as well.
We lost Klopp as well, but Liverpool are losing Klopp at the end of the season too. But obviously, Jürgen Klinsmann knows what it's like to be in that position and the pressure that's on there. And obviously, it wasn't Bayern Munich that you were at, Stevie, but to just think of the pressure that is on a manager there to deliver, even if he is going at the end of the season.
Well, I think Jürgen sort of painted a good picture that, you know, it's just expected. The problem, if you're the manager or the coach of Bayern Munich, not only are you expected to win all these trophies, but when you know that your team... Listen, you can look at results and you can say that Bayern have got more points this year than they did last year. But the truth is, we've been listening to Tuchel in particular, talking from the start of the season to now about things that are going wrong all the time, how they're not performing. You know, he never painted any sort of rosy picture. So if you're in the Champions League and you're going into a game against a side like Arsenal, who, as I've said before, have been... You talk about consistent. That has to pile the pressure on even more. It's one thing to get a good draw and be up against a side that you know you can beat when you're struggling yourself, but to go up against a side who you know right now, in most departments other than one, number nine, are probably better than you... That just piles the pressure on.
Let's get to the pressure on the number nine then, because it does feel as though in this, we're hearing so many times people saying, OK, well, he's going to be the key man, as expected, for the money they paid for him as well, is Harry Kane in a Champions League campaign. How is that pressure on him, especially going into this game against Arsenal, of all teams?
And I think Harry Kane relishes that pressure, and which is why you move from Spurs to Bayern Munich, because you want to come up in these big Champions League encounters. You want to be that difference maker, and the price tag suggests every bit as much. But it's difficult in that this season hasn't gone as Bayern would have hoped. And yes, as Stevie was alluding to in terms of a points tally. They are better off than they were last season, so there's huge expectation. But when you spend $150 million in a summer between Harry Kane and Kim, of course you expect that team to perform better, and that's what Bayern Munich are doing. That's not why they were brought. They were brought for these big games to deliver on this stage. But the team just has not been playing well, or well enough, I would suggest. And against an Arsenal, who I stand by, I think are playing the best football in Europe right now, the difference between Arsenal and everybody else maybe is their lack of experience. But this is a huge test for both. And one that I hope Harry Kane is looking forward to, because after all, that's why you kind of push for this move. If he wasn't, I'm sure he'd still be at Spurs.
Frank, he really will be under the spotlight, especially against Arsenal.
I mean, that's going to be very interesting, because we all know that Harry Kane is the best striker in the world, and he's going to be 100% ready to bring something. But as Shaka explained, you know, the prime from Bayern Munich doesn't come from there. I mean, he's going to produce, he's going to give everything, and especially against the worst Tottenham enemy, Arsenal, he's going to be ready for that. But they really have a prime in the middle of the park. So the issue from Harry Kane is to be not too much tempted to get the ball and go back in the middle to try to touch the ball and also organize, because he's not going to be at the end for the finishing. So it's going to be tricky for him. Hopefully he's going to be helped by his teammates. But yeah, I have no concern at all about the performance of Harry Kane. He's going to be there. He's going to create problems to Saliba and Gabriel for sure, because he's the top of the top for me as a striker right now.
We do have Jurgen Klinsmann back with us. Great to have you back again, Jurgen. We're just talking about Harry Kane, actually, and the pressure that's on him going into this clash.
I mean, we often, you know, talked about Harry Kane because he's such an exceptional striker. And he did that over so many, many years at Spurs. And now he comes to Bayern Munich and he delivers right away at Bayern Munich in an incredible, incredible fashion. I mean, obviously, he went to Bayern Munich because he badly wanted to win also titles. And now it looks like Bayer Leverkusen is running away with the German championship, at the moment at least, you know. And it will be a tough ride in the Champions League as well. But he has the quality to be always a difference maker, and he is a difference maker for the club already, for the fans in the Bundesliga. So his achievements are incredible. But, you know, it's now crunch time, you know. March, April, May is crunch time, and I hope that he can continue the way he's doing it so far and achieves his personal goals as well.
Let me get back to the domestic scene then with Bayern, if we can, Jurgen. And Bayern Munich looking likely to finish second this season. How surprised are you with how it's turned out? And how big a deal will this be if they do miss out on the title?
Well, obviously for Bayern Munich, it's highly disappointing if they don't win the German championship. It's because for them, it's just they're just used to it. It's just a normal thing. And so there will be always critics. There will be always disappointment. But I think in this case, this year, it's not correct. It's not fair to Bayern Munich, because I think all the compliments should go out to Bayer Leverkusen and Xavi Alonso and the club that has done incredible all year long. You know, so Bayern doesn't necessarily have a bad season. No, they have actually a fairly good season. But what Bayer Leverkusen is achieving at the moment, and hopefully for them, you know, they can keep up with it for the next 8 to 10 weeks. It's just a wonderful story. It's just amazing, the football that they showcase. It's amazing, you know, how they turn games around in the very last second. So that means that they have a lot of belief in their team, that they never give up, basically, culture that they created on the inside of the locker room. And it's fun. It's really fun to watch them. So it's for me, it's far more the credit for Bayer Leverkusen than it is anything disappointing with Bayern Munich.
How impressed have you been with Xabi Alonso as the manager at Leverkusen then, Jurgen? I mean, we're just seeing his numbers here and the fact that they've gone on this incredible unbeaten run thus far.
No, Xabi Alonso is showcasing a way of coaching this team and guiding this team in a very humble way, in a very obviously knowledgeable way, because he's highly knowledgeable. But he always expresses curiosity to improve his own skill set, to improve his own knowledge of the game, but also of where he is. You know, he speaks fluent German. He's integrating in that area. He knows what Bayer Leverkusen, which is a very, very different club to the likes of Borussia Dortmund or of Bayern Munich. He shows how proud he is to guide this club, and that he himself is still in a learning curve. But the way he's doing that is just impressive. It's just fun to watch. It's just great to see that, you know, a manager with his experience as a player that he had now dives into the coaching world and rocks it. He rocks it really well in Germany right now.
What should he do next? If you were him and you had the option to stay at Leverkusen, go to Bayern or go to Liverpool, what would you do, Jürgen?
Oh, no, don't ask me that stuff. Okay. No, I mean, it obviously will happen. It will happen that the big ones are chasing after him. It's just normal because he showcases a high quality. He's a very humble person, as I said, a likable person. And there will be the big ones knocking at his door and asking him if he would consider to come to them. I mean, obviously, a lot of changes will be made this summer in the coaches' transfer window. And, you know, you talk about Liverpool, obviously, Jürgen Klopp, who I'm a big admirer of Jürgen Klopp, not about it. But he said that he will step down. And that decision obviously leaves now a lot of speculation out there who's going to be the next one. And Liverpool, Bayern Munich made that statement already about Thomas Tuchel, that he will leave. So, yes, Xabi Alonso is right up there, you know, in the discussion panel. And it will be interesting to see what he will decide. But don't ask me, you know, how he should decide.
That was world-class deflection.
It was a huge deflection. It was a huge deflection. Frank, what would you do?
Oh, well, I think the fair decision would be to stay at Bayer Leverkusen to play the Champions League and to show to the world that you're in twice in a row, 2 years in a row, you can produce something unbelievable. As Jürgen said, the season is perfect. They haven't lost a game, and the way they play, the way they understand the game, and the way they appreciate the performances is absolutely fantastic. Now, you know, seeing him at Liverpool after him having been a player to that club would be a fantastic way of maybe following Jürgen Klopp. And the way Jürgen Klopp made Liverpool playing will suit Xabi Alonso's way of thinking the football. So I see as a transfer a very good possibility to not touch too much the dressing room, even if we're going to see some people leaving and people coming. But the way of thinking, the way of playing shouldn't change if Xabi Alonso decide to go to Liverpool.
All right, Stevie's agreeing. Oh, yeah, I like that idea. Yeah, you're on board with that.
I'm not a tour buyer.
Is there any point? Should I ask you?
No, not really.
No, we all know. We all know, don't we, Sega? Okay, yeah. Don't forget, you can watch the Bundesliga here and how it will all play out when it comes to the title running. They will be back in action after the international break and back with a bang for Bayern Munich because it is Der Klassiker. That game will be available on ESPN from 12:30 Eastern, and I think our very own Jürgen Klinsmann might just be there, so make sure to be with us for that game. Passion, drive and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights and more. Whether you're into speed, power or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
10 seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? your relationships, your skills, your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/network.
Okay, a look at the Premier League standings. Spurs fifth, 3 points behind Villa, but they have played a game lost, less. Obviously, they had that loss to Fulham, which prevented them moving above Aston Villa. But fourth place is not the biggest of Ange Postecoglou's problems at the moment.
I don't see fourth as a prize. This club's finished fourth before, it's finished second before. So you can throw all sorts of things at it. It's reached the Champions League final. You can throw all sorts of things at it, but this club has achieved things. So fourth is not my end goal. I don't want to finish fourth if we haven't grown as a team and developed as a team. And no one believes me, that's fine, because I think they, you know, part of the narrative is to try and push you into these kind of positions where you think that fourth is some kind of achievement that you gives you something for next year. It doesn't give you anything unless fourth would be great. If I feel like we're growing as a team and we've created something that's going to bring us success next year. But fourth is not our goal. It hasn't been. It's not my goal. It certainly isn't my goal. But, you know, I get it from the outside, and particularly in the Premier League, that it seems like, you know, people push you into that position where you need to succeed or fail just on an outcome. And I just don't think that's how you get success. Success is built on, I think, more tangible stuff. If we finish fifth, and I think we've got a team to challenge next year, I won't be disappointed.
Frank and Jürgen still with us. Jürgen, what did you think of what Ange Postecoglou had to say there about the top four?
I think he's absolutely right. Obviously, you want to achieve the maximum of what is possible, you know, and they started off very, very well in the beginning of the season, and they dropped a bit. Now, obviously, they are in this race for the fourth spot, because fourth spot, it takes you to the Champions League, and that's the creme de la creme, and that's where you want to be, you know, you're football-wise and financially as well. So I totally get his message, and he's ambitious, and he wants more. He wants to build something very special at Spurs. And he started that process from the beginning on. And by the way, he communicated that he wants to play attacking-minded football, because that's the DNA of Spurs. DNA of Spurs is go out there, dare and do. I mean, you got to go and give it a shot and rather score five goals and concede four instead of winning just 1-0. Now, this is just Tottenham. And he lives that. And so he lives that. That job, and he wants to build something special, which I think is in the middle of it. It will take some time. It also took some time for Mauricio Pochettino to get them into the Champions League final. So it's for me, it's normal that he's a little bit anxious and maybe also impatient, because you want to get to things, you know, the fastest way possible. But it will take some time.
Are you okay with him saying that, Stevie?
Absolutely. Mm. Yeah, I think he's been a breath of fresh air. Yeah. I mean, you talk about wanting to play for a guy. I mean, everything he says, you believe. And he's basically saying, what I heard is that all I want to do is whoever my squad is, whoever my players are, I want them to be at the best as many and as often as I can do that. And whatever will be. Because in football, you don't always get what you deserve. But I tell you what, if you put the work in, and if you believe, and if you go out and give every single thing, then nobody is going to have a problem with it. And at the end of the day, if he does that, then it's up to the people up the stairs to give him better players to then push on and maybe compete for the Premier League. But I love every time he opens his mouth. You're never left in any doubt of where he's coming from.
I have to say, I'm with Stevie in that. Postecoglou really has been a breath of a fresh air to this league. I think one of the worst cliches to come into the game over the last few years, but in relation to big clubs, is that fourth place is somehow a trophy. While fourth place gets you into Champions League, and maybe that's what your directors want and your accountants want, from the time as a manager, that's your target, that's where you're going to hit. That, more times than not, is going to be a ceiling. You cannot tell me that Pep Guardiola arrived at Manchester City saying, I'm building a team to get into the top four and to get to the knockout stage of the Champions League. No. From the time he gets there, at day one, he's thinking, what do I need to win the league? What do I need to win the Champions League? And goes about his business in building that team. And that's what Postecoglou is saying here. He's saying that I'm building a team to win this league. If in the process of building a team to win the league, it means finishing fifth this year, I'm going to take it. But I'm not going to patch together a team that just about gets me into fourth, because that's not his endgame. And for too long, it had been big clubs' endgame, and I think it's cost them. Certainly Arsene Wenger said that. I was very critical of him when he said it. But now, all of a sudden, it's taken Arsenal this much time to kind of get past that mindset. And now, Arsenal do not settle for finishing top four. That feels like a failure, or should feel like a failure to them. And it's reflected in their performances and how the club is run.
It's interesting when you guys talk about how it would be to play under him as well, because it does seem to be the general consensus from his players is that it's great to play under him. This is Dejan Kulusevski talking about it. He said, we're not going to win every game. Yes. And actually, oh, there's the beginning. It says, everybody talks about tactics and winning, and that's good. But with Ange, it means a little bit more, because it's about you as a person. It's about you as a man and what you believe in. Ange says, I don't care if we lose, because everyone loses in life. If we lose, we're going to lose on our terms. Never go away from being you. We're not going to win every game. And actually, Ange never speaks about trophies. He says, yes, we'll get there. But first of all, we have to become us. We have to find ourselves. Go ahead, Frank.
No, I have a smile in my face when I read that and when I was listening to Postecoglou, because it's like Ted Lasso. We found the new Ted Lasso and the new AFC Richmond club, you know, where everybody's happy. They don't care about trophies. They only want to be happy and win games playing well. It's what it is, but it's only the truth.
And Ange put it. A bit more work in than Ted in football, though, hadn't he, Frank?
Oh, yes, and he has bigger knowledge than Ted Lasso, for sure, about football. And I love the guy. I really love the guy. His philosophy of life, where, yes, he want to win everything, and I feel that he's very ambitious, but he want to win it in a certain way. And especially in the past, when we saw lately how Spurs were playing so defensively, so being unattractive, now it's completely different. Every game for Spurs, you enjoy watching them. You know that you're going to be a result. Even when they lost against Chelsea, because they were two men down, they tried to attack. They tried to enjoy their football and make people happy in the stands. So I love that philosophy. I really wish that will be more coaches like that, because it's an entertainment. We have to enjoy. Yeah, you need results, but in a certain way, in a way where people are happy to watch you playing.
Jürgen, how many goals would you have been scoring under Postecoglou back at Spurs with this motivation and this support behind you?
I definitely would enjoy it. But as Frank said, you know, everything has to kind of fall into space. And it's a club that needs to define itself altogether. You know, that comes, that starts up with the chairman, with the boards of the club, with obviously the fans are extremely important, and everybody working in the club to live this type of a philosophy, to live it day in, day out. And then throughout living it also to develop this extreme hunger, which, for example, that I talked before about it, Bayern Munich has already since decades. Bayern Munich started that process in the 70s with the big team of Franz Beckenbauer, Gerd Müller, and Uli Hoeneß and so forth, you know. So over the decades, they live this hunger of winning trophies and playing attractive football that went hand in hand. But this is an interesting process now that Spurs is going through with Ange, and I think, yeah, he's able to do that. I mean, Mauricio Pochettino was so close to win the Champions League. I mean, it's not that long ago. So we keep our fingers crossed that they can make it happen the next couple of years.
We wanted to end the segment on something fun, because basically Ben Davies has been speaking to Gavin Jules in an exclusive interview, and one part of the interview really did stand out. Here it is.
So Brendan Rodgers was the manager. Pretty crazy situation. First day, we arrive at the training centre, which was a health club, which for us, it sounds crazy now, but like that's what we were dealing with. And that was, we didn't have our own training ground. As a youth team, we used to arrive at the stadium, do all our chores, a minibus to the local pitch at the university, and then minibus back to shower there. No breakfast, no lunch, yeah, like we get now, whereas the first team had the health club, which was a big deal for us.
So this is basically a gym, right?
This is a gym.
There's women like in spandex doing like kickboxing in the next room, or maybe it wasn't that fancy a gym.
There's women doing, no, it was like, it was a semi-fancy gym. It was a lower, like, for us, but there's, you know, there's a little cafe area where people were having their coffees when we turned up in the morning. We had a little roped off conservatory where the first team could have some scrambled eggs if you wanted it when you came in, but we all had a pass, we all had to let ourselves in. We used to go to the public changing room. This is a Premier League team.
And this is not a Premier League in the 1970s. You are not that old. You are 30 years old, right?
Yeah.
And this is just 12 years ago.
Yeah, 12 years ago when Swansea first arrived in the Premier League.
Mind.
And we used to change in the public gym, the public locker room.
With random people.
With random people who'd be like, oh, good game on the weekend. One of those, or if it wasn't such a good game, they'd probably let you know as well.
Yeah. Okay.
So we had managers. Brendan Rodgers would have been there. Chris Davis, who now works at Spurs with me, would attest to this being exactly the same. The manager's office was under the stairs in the health club. It had like a little code. And when Christmas time came, he got kicked out for Santa to go in there for the kids. It was crazy.
So basically what we're trying to say is it's not all glitz and glam when you're a professional footballer. We wanted to get some of the stories of the panel from the guys of something that might have surprised us as to it not being all glitz and glam as a pro.
Well, when I came over to the US, I was the head coach of the Boston Bulldogs and what is the USL. And we played a game in North Carolina on the Saturday, and we were flying back on the first flight in the morning to Boston, which was leaving around 6:15, 6:30. And so to save money, we didn't get a hotel. So we finished the game on the Saturday. We found a beach club and we stayed there until they threw us out about 12:30, 1 o'clock in the morning. And then we found a Waffle House and we all piled into the Waffle House.
With your wash bags?
We left them on the bus. Because what we did was, instead of buying the rooms, he hired the general manager, Joe Bradley, hired the bus for the whole night. So we left all the gear, everyone was in the bus. Get in the Waffle House, something to eat. And of course, we weren't filling in time. So what we did was, half a dozen of the boys told the girls behind the counter to go and sit down, and they brought them a cup of coffee and all the rest of it. And the lads washed the dishes, dragged them and put them all away. And we got chucked out of there. It was shut at about 3 a.m. Drove to the airport, sat in the car park, because the airport was still closed. We sat in the car park till about 5 o'clock, and then we all piled in and we got the first flight back to Boston at 6:30. And it actually turned out to be a great exercise in bonding, because everybody actually enjoyed themselves.
And a great way to ensure you sleep on the flight home.
Well, listen, hotel rooms are overrated, I'm telling you.
Shaka, anything stand out to you?
I don't know how to follow that. I'll be honest. Nothing of the sort. I mean, obviously this is before Ben Davies' time, but at Newcastle we trained at Durham University's ground. So when the university had sports day or something of the sort, we had to go train elsewhere, usually St James's Park. But we didn't have a home of our own either. And then even before that, and then this is lower league, at Reading, there was one point where we didn't have access to the training ground. The training ground was privately held by a gentleman called Martin Diener, who was in oil. So we train on in a public park in the centre of town, and you'd have to send like the kit man out or something early in the morning, find somewhere that people hadn't walked their dogs. let me just put it that way, and kind of put cones up. So to at least suggest to people, you know, well, don't walk your dog here because something's about to happen here. and we train in a public park. And that went on for a while. And then, of course, but now you don't know where it's going to be because the kit man has to go out before and see where it's clean. So as a team, you walk to the public park and just kind of go walking around until you find the kit man. That was par for the course.
Surely this didn't happen to our World Cup winners tonight. Surely it was all glamorous.
Impossible.
For you, Jürgen, and you don't have any stories like this.
Well, I think, you know, most of the professional players, even today, which, you know, obviously live in a different time with social media and all the interest from all over the place, I think they love the simplicity of life as well. Like we did, you know, we love to go around the street, around the corner and have a hot dog or a fish and chips and have a beer here and there in a pub, you know, like everybody else. I think that's even the generation of today wants to hang out together and wants to go out and want to enjoy their time in a very simple way. Obviously, with the media today being a completely different landscape as it was 20, 30, 40 years ago, it's different because as soon as they go in the pub and as soon as they order the first beer, you know, they are the first cell phones already taking photos and 5 minutes later it goes viral. But the players themselves, I think they still like that as well, like we did in our days. And I think that will also continue to ask always for a simple lifestyle and being happy with where you are and what you do.
Frank, what were your experiences of when it wasn't so glamorous?
When I signed for Chelsea, I didn't know what to expect. I was coming from Strasbourg when we had our own facilities, a very nice pitch, nice dressing room. And I signed for Chelsea where Rugulit, Mark Hughes, Craig Burley, Gianfranco Zola, Gianluca Vialli, some very nice names from people who have known the top of the top. And I arrived the first day and I discovered the training ground before being at Cobham. We were at Arlington in between. It was a landscape between the motorway, the freeway going outside of London and Heathrow Airport. So we had to stop talking for like 10 minutes when the Concorde was taking off because it was too noisy. That was very windy. That was horrible. We were sharing also the dressing room with the hockey on grass team. I don't know if you say that, but that's what it was. But that was so nice. So that was so funny. I saw the young John Terry, you know, being the boot guy, you know,
apprentice.
That was the beginning. Yes, exactly. That was the beginning of the new era of Chelsea, and I was in '96. But that was perfect for the atmosphere to stay down on earth and to experience and build up something that was perfect. And I regret Arlington, regret a lot.
Frank, missing it. Oh, the days of boot boys and all those things. I love all the old stories. Jürgen, it's been great to have you with us. Thank you so much for being with us once again. And we look forward to speaking to you a lot more.
Thank you, guys.
And you can hear more from Ben Davies' interview on the next edition of the Gab and Jules Show. That's actually dropped today, so make sure to... It dropped on Friday. It drops on Friday, the one with Ben Davies coming up. So make sure to check that out wherever you do get your podcasts.
Picture this. You arrive at your hotel. You have an important online meeting lined up with clients from all across the country. You have your laptop open, ready to begin, and the Wi-Fi is so terrible, you can't even connect. These types of stressful situations happen all the time, but they don't have to. When you book a room at La Quinta by Wyndham, you have access to their free high-speed Wi-Fi, so you can take care of those critical emails, join your meetings on time, and even unwind by streaming your favorite shows without having to worry. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Here's the US Men's National Team starting 11 for the CONCACAF Nations League semi-final tonight against Jamaica. A couple of notable things is Malik Tillman over Gio Reyna, Balogun over Ricardo Pepi, and Sergiño Dest not playing due to suspension. That game coming up tonight, as is Football America's right after it to look back on everything that goes down in this clash. Be sure to be with Sebi and Herc on ESPN Plus at the conclusion of the game. Portland Thorns against New Jersey, New York Gotham FC coming up on Sunday, 7 p.m. Eastern. The NWSL season underway now. You can catch that game on ESPN2 and ESPN Plus. And that will do it for the latest edition of ESPN FC. We have got extra time coming up next, though. These guys are going to be answering your questions. Stick around. Frank is sticking around for it, too. Welcome into the latest edition of Extra Time. We've got Frank the Buff, Shaq Hislop and Stevie Nicol answering your questions today. All right, let's get started, guys. Guys, did you ever decline a call-up for your national team because you wanted to stay focused on your club team? If so, what was the excuse you gave your national team coach?
Never.
I have.
It actually
led to me not being called up for another 10 years or something of the sort. So when I was playing at Reading, this should have been 1994, I was the only goalkeeper on Reading's books. And Trent Abego and Jack Warner, for some strange reason, arranged a game November 19th, 1994. And now the backstory to that is we'd lost to the US November 19th, 1989 to qualify for the World Cup. If we had drawn, we would have qualified for the World Cup. For some reason, Jack Warner decided he wanted to hold a friendly to commemorate 5 years after that game, a game that we lost, which makes no sense. Exactly. And it was outside of the international window. It was outside of an international window. And I'm the only goalkeeper in Reading's books. And I'm 2 years into my professional career. So I as it happened, the Trent Abego president, well, Trent Abego were going to Saudi Arabia, I think, to play a game. So I met with them. And I said, listen, I don't want to come to this game. I'm focusing on my career here. I don't want to leave in the middle of, you know, it's a 9-minute international window. And he was totally supportive of that. Then all of a sudden, I get a fax at the club. Jack Warner was insisting that I show up or get banned. So I turned it down. I said, no, I'm not coming. And the excuse I used was, because I have a British passport. I'm like, I'm entitled to I hadn't played for Trinidad and Tobago before that. And that was it, and that kind of sparked this standoff between me and Jack, that I didn't make my debut for Trinidad and Tobago until 1999, 5 years later.
Wow.
Still no happy, is he?
No,
I'm not.
Still no happy.
It's the dumbest thing ever. It's the dumbest thing ever. Who celebrates a game that you lost?
God. Apparently Trinidad and Tobago.
Right? Good God.
Do you know, I pulled out quite a lot, but they were all friendlies. I never pulled out of a proper game.
What were your excuses on the friendlies?
Oh, the groin. I always had trouble with my groin. So Dalglish would come up to me on the Friday and go, do you want to go? And I'd be like, ah, I'm not bothered. He says, all right. So then he did it a couple of times, but he would take me off with 10 minutes to go. If we're comfortably, we'd won the game, all done and dusted.
That's a 10 minutes
to go.
Conspiracy.
10 minutes to go, take me off, and then that was it. And then what happened was the following international, which was a proper game, so I go and meet up, and Andy Roxworth, who was the manager at the time, came up to him and went, she said, you think we're daft? I'm like, what are you talking about? He went, yeah. Coming off 10 minutes before the end. I was like, I have no idea what you're talking about.
My groins.
I'm disgusted because it was under a Scottish manager as well who should have cared more for his country.
Friendly. Nobody was bothered. The friendly. Never a proper game. I was giving somebody else the opportunity to play.
Oh, how kind of you.
Can I just say?
I didn't want to make
myself.
I didn't want to push my own agenda. But
one man said never, and he won a World Cup. So there's a moral in that story, guys. All right?
So if I'd taken that call up in November, should I have to be going to win the World Cup?
Hold on. So you're telling me Scotland never won the World Cup because I never win?
Yeah. Maybe they had more professional
Because of your dodgy groins, Scotland never won a World Cup.
Okay. What was that first international window like when you stopped playing for your country? Did you miss it or did you enjoy the time off, Frank?
What was that first international window like when you stopped playing for your country? I stopped in 2002, after 2002 World Cup. And you know what? 2003, I signed for Qatar. So it was more than my first international window. It was more like holidays for a while. So I don't know what it means. I played 7 years for my country, and I was involved almost every time. And that was always a pleasure. I never complained about that. I remember having maybe, because I played for Chelsea and we didn't have holidays in winter. So I had like for 5 years, only 15 days holidays per year, but I was very happy. I was happy, always happy to play for my country. I never consider a friendly game as a friendly game because I was playing for my country and I wanted to win for my country. Mm-hmm. So it was was my way of thinking. I'm sorry, Stevie.
Is that a dig?
But,
is that a dig? I just felt a dig there.
Not even that subtle either.
I'll never sleep tonight.
The groins?
That's how I felt. And when I stopped, you know, I was starting to be fed up with football, so I was happy to have some good time, you know, with my family and also on holiday, so that was great. But never complained about being called up for the national team.
And you regrets after retirement?
No. Mine was absolutely fantastic. Well, my final game for Trinidad and Tobago was against England, the World Cup. So that was, I put an end to my international career after that, literally went out on the highest of highs, and I have zero regrets.
Zero regrets.
No. I actually answered the, excuse me, Frank. I actually answered the call for my country, if you don't mind. I'd already retired from international football.
That's all right.
And 2 years later, I got a call because there's an injury crisis, asked me to play. And of course I played.
What a man.
So, what a man.
Take that. Well done.
Did any of you have an opportunity to play at the Olympics?
No.
Never interested. No interest.
Thank you.
Yeah, it's funny that people are talking about the Olympics before, like they talk about the Ballon d'Or. It wasn't even planned. I know France won in 1984, they won the Olympics in Los Angeles, but it never been a goal to win the Olympics or play for the Olympics as a football player. It wasn't like part of our, you know, dreams or whatever it is, part of our culture. It's funny. It's a World Cup, the Euro, and that's it. But it's not the Olympics. Olympics for amateurs at the time, and it was for people who are working hard for 4 years to be known for one race, or I don't know what it is, but for another sport. I think basketball, football, and tennis shouldn't be there. I understand the money point of it, but otherwise, it doesn't attract me. I never watch any football game during the Olympics. I'm not interested.
To be honest, before Frank said France won the Olympics in 1984, I was about to ask when did the men's soccer start in the Olympics? I thought that was a new thing. I honestly thought it was a new thing. I didn't realise that it was going on at all.
Right, well, that answers that question, doesn't it? Frank, what's the worst stadium to play at as a player?
In terms of what, atmosphere or facilities?
I think you can choose what stands out to you, whatever it may be.
Well, I would say that the what is the name of Selhurst Park at the time, the away dressing room was quite awful, was small. in the corner. That was pretty strange. But you had some, yeah, you had some stadiums like that. I played also in Guingamp in Brittany in France. And it's a very small stadium, and that's the strangest atmosphere. It's like you are in an amateur environment, even if the team that you play against is always been very good. So yeah, I would say Selhurst Park. Didn't really like it at the time.
You're laughing and smiling as you say Selhurst Park.
Well, Selhurst Park was a tough place to go. It really was, and certainly in terms of Premier League clubs and clubs who or at least spent significant time in the
pitch
Premier League.
Was rotten to play.
Yeah, Selhurst Park is right up there. Probably the worst stadium I played in as a professional was Grimsby. But then they are a long way away from the Premier League. Playing in Central America was always quite interesting. Fans would often fill little plastic bags with bodily fluids and throw at the players. Which, as a goalkeeper, made for an interesting 90 minutes. Let's just put it that way.
Oh, I always think if you get did one ever hit you?
No, I used to stay outside the box.
Sweeper keeper.
Honestly, the chip was on. The chip was on all game long because I would not go back into my 6-yard box until literally you were running past me. Seriously, it was tough.
Oh,
it was an experience.
I can imagine.
Strangely, I would say my worst was the first time I ever stepped on the field for Ayr United. It was Arbroath away.
That just didn't sound good.
Now, Arbroath's pitch, stadium, was 10 yards from the North Sea.
Oh.
I have never been so cold in my life. And back then, we didn't have all your waterproof big jackets and the whole thing. So it's freezing, the wind's coming off the North Sea, it's raining, I've got a jacket on that's not waterproof, and by the time I get on, I can't feel my toes. I can't feel my toes.
No.
And I've gone on with about 10, 15 minutes to go. Honestly, it was horrendous. Never forget it.
Yeah, it sounded cold, didn't it?
Oh, just sorry. Just the name. Okay. Just the name alone is cold.
I feel cold thinking about it.
Stevie.
Why is Kay laughing?
I'm not.
Why is Kay laughing?
Stevie, what was school like for you as a burgeoning footballer?
Oh.
Did you finish school before leaving?
Let me just say.
Did you have to go?
Did you have to continue
your studies while playing?
Why are you laughing so much, Kay? Why are you laughing? Why are you laughing so much?
Hello, yeah. Actually, one
because she knows the answer.
why are you laughing, Kay? It's a serious question.
Can you imagine how serious he was about his studies?
All I will say was, I was not there 1 second longer than I had to. That's all I'll say, Matt.
If you've not read Stevie's book, you should go and read it. It's brilliant.
I only went to school for playtime and PE.
And lunchtime.
Yeah, lunchtime, aye. Lunchtime, playtime and PE. The rest of it was a waste of time. I sit looking at Wendy.
Oh, all right, for Shaka, today is the start of March Madness. Did you fill out your bracket? And who do you have winning it all? Sorry about Howard's loss.
Yeah, I know. I did not fill out a bracket. I have absolutely no idea. I don't follow college. I don't follow college basketball.
Yeah.
I don't.
Okay. Yeah, no. Maybe that's a... Maybe LA? Does he do a match?
Yeah, maybe LA.
Dan probably does, doesn't he?
Dan?
Dan Fisher. Dan loves all that stuff.
No, no chance.
No chance
Dan did a bracket.
Yeah, I think Olympic football, soccer, made its debut in like the early 1900s.
Really?
Yeah.
I thought I was about 20 years old.
Yeah.
So?
Just thought I'd put that there at the end.
Thank you very much.
Shouldn't have bothered. I'm not interested.
Anyway, that will do it for the latest edition.
TV's off to study.
I'm off to study.
TV's off.
Thank you so much for being with us.
It'll be fun. Your levels.
We'll be back tomorrow.
That was so funny.
Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They're the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at electricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's LECTRIC ebikes.com.